This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast, Kevin and Chuck. Today, we're going to talk about assassinations. We are going to talk about some fun stories and whatever, because there are some pretty crazy attempts out there and different, you know, ideas and things. And I guess it's kind of just something to get you thinking and think about, you know, what kind of things could be threats and different things like that. But we are actually going to talk about some of the practical things you can do to really be more self-aware and kind of not get yourself in a bad situation, and see how that kind of applies. But there's actually been 4 U.S. presidents that have been killed by assassinations. Abraham Lincoln, right? That's the first one that comes to mind. Maybe JFK. Mm-hmm. What about James Garfield, 1881, and William McKinley?
Those two aren't talked about as much, are they?
No, you don't really hear about that. And then there were some attempts. The only ones notably that I read about that were the president was actually injured would be, the Gipper, Ronald Reagan, guys think about, you know, that mm-hmm. comes to mind. And then Theodore Roosevelt. Now, you had some insight on Roosevelt or?
Yeah, that one's an interesting story because Teddy Roosevelt was, you know, everybody knows that Teddy Roosevelt was a bit of a badass. And I feel like 90% of surviving an assassination is being a badass.
Yeah.
So Teddy Roosevelt was elected or not elected president. He was vice president when McKinley was shot. And he became president. Then he was elected to a second term. And then he he didn't run for a third term.
Okay.
But he was unhappy with the president who became president. That was Taft. He was unhappy with his performance, so decided to run again later on. And it was during this election campaign that he was shot. Okay. Now, it was a guy named John Schrank. Apparently, McKinley's ghost was talking to him and told him that he had to kill Teddy Roosevelt. And he was waving to the crowd and walking to his car when this guy came up and he shot him in the chest, point blank. But in his pocket, in his breast coat pocket, was his steel glass case cover, you know, for his glasses, and his speech, which was folded in half, which was 50 pages long because he liked to talk. So the bullet passed through both of those things and then into his chest. And he was disarmed immediately, the assassin, by just a random guy standing in the crowd. And okay. then a bunch of people all piled on top of him. Teddy Roosevelt told him not to beat the shit out of him.
Okay.
Just grab him and take him. And then he coughed into his hand. And when he coughed into his hand, he saw that there wasn't any blood. So he knew the bullet hadn't entered his lung. So he decided instead of going to the hospital, he would just go give that speech.
Well, I mean, if you write 50 pages, it had been ruined. Okay.
So he just had to give an off the cuff speech, which lasted an hour and a half. He just, with a bullet in his chest, he just gave the speech because he's a badass. And where I would have gone to a hospital and cried like a bitch, he went to the speech and ripped his coat open to show everybody the blood stain and started yelling about how it takes more than that to kill a bull moose.
There you go.
I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, Teddy Roosevelt is one of my favorites. There.
Speaking of badasses who narrowly avoided assassination, I have to point out, remember that time they threw a shoe at W?
And there was two shoes, right?
Right.
You threw the first one and, you know, he was pretty nimble because that shoe would have hit him in the head, but he dodged the shoe. He got out of the way. If you watch the video, you can see he ducked out of the way and the shoe went past him. And then he stood back up and smiled. And the second shoe just kind of wasn't even close to him. But so that guy went to like an Egyptian. I think that was in Egypt. Is that right?
I think
it was in Egypt. And yeah, so that guy's life after that was not pleasant. He went to an Egyptian prison and they did not treat him kindly.
Yeah, they don't go for that kind of thing. Now, I do know, a shoe can be a dangerous weapon. I did have a customer back in the day who was a Sikh. And, you know, they don't mess around, right?
They don't fuck around, right?
They don't fuck around. So he had a little gas station. I know that surprises you. But he had a gas station, and he'd been robbed several times. And somebody came in with a shotgun to rob him. And he just pulled off his shoe and started throwing it at the guy. And after he threw one shoe, he grabbed the other and chased him out into the road. The guy dropped the shotgun and just, that's it. I'm out.
Just because of his shoe, huh?
So, you know, you never know when that's going to pay off. Now, I do have one more kind of interesting U.S. president assassination attempt. And that would be Andrew Jackson. Now, his would-be assassin was Richard Lawrence. Now, we know him as Richard Lawrence, but he knew himself as King Richard III.
That's right.
And as King Richard III, he felt that the U.S. government owed him a little retribution compensation. That sounds like a better word.
Right.
We'll go with that. And, so he had two guns, fired the first one, misfire, fired the second one, misfire, allowing Jackson to take on his attacker with a cane walking stick.
Jackson was almost 70 years old when this happened. He wasn't a spring chicken. But they physically had to restrain him from keeping him from beating this guy to death.
Well, you know how old men get. You know, they get a little cranky, you know?
I feel like Andrew Jackson was a crotchety old man when he was 30. So yeah, by the time he was 70, he was just plain nasty. Just a mean old man.
Now, I know like some of the craziest you hear about are always like Fidel Castro.
Right.
And I mean, you know, you hear about what, the exploding cigar, and you hear about they had one plan to take a wetsuit and put some kind of flesh eating virus in it. And so they were going to give him the wetsuit. And then when he put it on, it would do him in.
All these assassination attempts of of Castro seem like they're from a bad James Bond villain.
They really do. I mean, they were just
ridiculous. Like, just absurd shit.
Poison cigars, exploding cigars. Well, James Bond or even Wile E. Coyote, right?
Right.
I mean, that's... But let's talk about a little bit about kind of what you could do, like the situational awareness or you know, what to be aware of with a, you know, to observe or you know, maybe prevent an assassination attempt. What kind of things are people, you know, should they be looking for? What do you, like, what's the process?
Well, you know, the one major location, you know, that most assassination attempts take is they take place in what they call the red zone. Now, that's not that's basically what that is the location when you're moving from one place to another. You know, if you're leaving a speech or leaving someplace, going to your car, out in the open someplace. Now, if you wanted to kill somebody, say you hated your neighbor and you wanted to shoot him, it wouldn't be smart to go break into their house and try and attack them. You might just wait outside until they're walking to their car. You know, that sort of open place is the most dangerous place. Some place where somebody else can be concealed and they can access you. They could watch you, you know, get a pattern of what you do. And they could easily make an escape. So basically, these sorts of places you should be checking out ahead of time. You know, obviously you're checking out your yard and stuff. You're checking out. But, you know, just take a look out your windows before you walk outside, you know. Be aware of what's going on in your neighborhood. If there's a car that's parked, you know, in front of your house all morning, with somebody sitting in it, you know, maybe be conscientious that that could be some crazy asshole in there. You know, that those are the types of things that you want to watch out.
It's for. The ATF, isn't it?
It's probably the ATF. It's probably the FBI.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Now, 62% of assassinations in the United States take place when somebody is going to their car, whether they're the driver or, you know, it's the president's limousine or whatever it is, most of those attempts happen from leaving from a building to the vehicle.
Okay.
Now there's an idea of a controlled space, right? So, if, you know, when the president gives a speech, the Secret Service is, you know, vets the place beforehand, and then they're there guarding the place, watching people who are entering, watching people who are leaving, watching people in the crowd. And that can be more of a controlled area where you can, you know, kind of plan ahead and make the proper adjustments ahead of time to make sure it's a safe area. But
right.
The idea is that it'll offer you a little bit of cover, a little bit of concealment, and it'll be not very impregnable in the sense that people can't just enter and exit, you know, at their own.
Right. You can have your metal detectors and kind of that kind of stuff, you know, your little background check of who gets tickets to come in or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. depending on the level of security that you feel is necessary.
Right. Right. Now, one of the other things that you want to do, especially for, you know, a high value target, is you can't always make a private entrance to a building. Sometimes it has to be a pub, you know, you have to arrive publicly.
Okay.
But most of the time they're going to be waiting for you to leave. That's, you know, that's, they know where you're at and they know where you're going to be going. And that's where you would plan the attack. So that's the place that you have to be conscientious of. So they always say, arrive publicly, but depart privately. You remember those old videos and stuff where you'd see Elvis has left the building? They wouldn't tell people when Elvis was leaving. They'd only tell people after he had left. So, you know, so he wouldn't be crowded by you know, hot hoochies that were trying to get some of that Elvis dick.
Is that what they were trying to do?
I mean, I'm just assuming that.
But that's how you imagine it. That's how it played out in your mind.
What happened when they drafted Elvis? Do you remember crazed women burned down draft buildings because they didn't want Elvis to have to go to war?
I mean, that is sacrilege, you know? Sending an American treasure like that off to to do the dirty work.
Yep. So, well, somebody's got to do it.
All right. So it's kind of different depending where you are on types of attacks. I guess people have a different mindset. So believe it or not, there's a security company, Gavin De Becker, right? And they wrote a book called Just 2 Seconds, I think. Somehow my notes got destroyed.
Gavin De Becker, that's not just a guy, that's a company, right?
Yeah, it's a security firm. Yeah, and it's called Just 2 Seconds.
All right.
Kind of expensive, the book, and hard to find and whatever. It's on Amazon, but it's like $58 because I think they printed out 4 copies for a training seminar or something. And then, you know, and then that was it. Yeah. But anyway, so I got a hold of a copy and did some research in there. And they say that in the U.S., attacks are most likely to be undertaken by lone assailants 87% of the time. Mm-hmm. So, whereas, believe it or not, outside the U.S., attacks are most likely committed by multiple assailants 71% of the time. So, totally different depending on where you are. I think it's because it's hard to get together a group of crazies. Also, I would honestly attribute that to our police state kind of thing I guess information gathering. Like if people are plotting together, we catch it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a thing.
Right. They always say the lone wolf is the most dangerous thing in the United States because plots are usually infiltrated or the information gets out somewhere. Somebody snitches.
Right.
But when it's one crazy person trying to, you know,
pulls
that's deliberately
off. You can't
trying. Right. Yeah. It's hard to track that person.
Yeah. Attacks in the U.S. are as likely to be indoors as outdoors, 53% versus 47%. Whereas outside the U.S., it's 80% outdoors.
Right.
Firearms are most likely the weapon of attack, 71%. In the U.S., handguns are more than twice as likely to be used as a long gun, 51% handgun, 20% long gun, and the rest are no gun. Whereas it's actually the exact opposite outside the U.S. It's more likely to be a long gun. Attacks in the U.S. are most likely to be at close range, less than 25 feet. It's 81% or less than 25 feet. And only 19% occurred more than 25 feet, with the longest range being 263 feet. So you're not getting that shooter, you know, mile shot there.
Yeah. Now it's interesting because that was one of the reasons that Jack Kennedy got shot was, you know, he was out in the open in a vehicle and they assumed that he was safe because he was a moving target. The perimeter was set back. You know, nobody was going to be able to make a shot from that distance on a moving target. And, you know, they were mistaken.
They were mistaken. Unless, of course, you were a Marine trained rifleman.
That's right. That's right. So who is that?
that was also a Marine that got Dimebag too.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that. Now, what happened with Dimebag?
Marine training. Now, Dimebag playing in a club and some crazed fan who was mad at the band breaking up, like he was worried about Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was
mad at, right, but it wasn't, it was just like playing with his brother in some band. I think it was Damage Plan or something like that. And he the guy was just so mad that they didn't stay with Phil and whatever. Phil was the singer in Pantera. And he just was like, how dare you take away Pantera from me? And that was it. Dime had to go.
Just angry that Pantera wasn't a thing anymore.
And huh? Dime wanted to make sure it stayed that way. Right, I guess.
No reunion. And
he had, you know, the giant security guard who had some loyalty to him. And he got in front of the bad guy, and but he ended up getting shot and I believe killed as well. So the two of them ended up, sorry, I don't know. That was off the cuff, me trying to remember all that. So I didn't plan that one. I don't have my research with me, but.
Well, I mean, I feel like of all the assassinations and assassination attempts that we're going to talk about today, that one there is the one that's damaged my heart the most, you know? Yeah. That's the one that's caused the most disruption in this country.
Is you remember where you were when you found out that Dime got shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know where I was. I don't know. Anyway, bombs are not as successful at killing the intended target. Now, they're good at killing people, but they're not good at killing specific people. 57% of the time does the intended target get killed with a bomb. Mm-hmm. And
so not the one you want to go to or, you know, that I feel like that's not the one you want to survive very, very much either though.
Right. You're now, you're
with Franz Ferdinand or was it Franz Ferdinand? The Archduke of, the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Yeah, I just know Archduke Ferdinand. I don't know how the first name.
I feel like they threw a hand grenade underneath his car.
Okay.
But it blew up after he had passed over it.
That's awkward.
And then they had went and done what they were supposed to. It actually killed a couple of people, but not the right ones.
Right.
And then on their way back, they went back to check on the victims. And the dude that had been part of the plot was eating a sandwich and just saw him show up. He was like, ah, perfect. And just walked out.
This worked out anyway.
Yeah.
Who stops to eat a sandwich and watch the carnage, you know? Well, you're like, hey.
I don't know. I feel like if you're an assassin, generally speaking, you want to get the fuck out of there. But that wasn't the case this time. He wasn't the one that threw the bomb. He was just part of the plot, though. So it was a different guy, but same group.
Now, a little bit more on the statistics you mentioned about the car. So it's, I think you'd said 64% happen while the protected person is around the car. And 77% of the time, those attacks are successful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's definitely, you know, the place that people seem to, you know, really go for it. Mm-hmm. Now, so they get into a lot how to phrase it, like celebrity protection and CEOs and things like that. People who are public figures, yet, you know, not maybe political public figures. Right. Mm-hmm. So one of the instances they were talking about, there was a girl, Rebecca Schaefer, and I think she was an actress. I should have looked it up more. I don't know. It was just a reference in the book and I was supposed to know who she was and I didn't get a chance to look it up. But the point is very relevant. And that is they were talking to the guy who killed her. And like he said he felt he had a dialogue. So they say, let me think. Famous people go even further by developing a direct dialogue and giving personal seeming attention to members of the general public. And that's something you want to avoid. So anyway, the guy's violent, you know, murder. They asked him, they were like, well, what made you, you know, so passionate about her and that you'd want to kill her? And he said it was a personal postcard she had written back to him. Saying Robert Dash, like, you know, a little line there, your letter was the nicest, most real letter I ever received. And she underlined real. She wrote, please take care, and drew a heart sign and then signed her name Rebecca. And he said, that's what propelled me to want to go do some more, get some more answers from her and get to know her better. So by actually making a personal connection and being kind is how she ended up like attracting, you know, the crazy assailant and drawing him in and, you know, bringing him into that world. And to me, that's kind of crazy, but it makes sense. You know, that's the kind of thing that, I mean, obviously you're crazy if you're like, hey, I need to have a closer connection because that person's right. kind to me. I mean, I understand wanting that attraction. Like, hey, you know, we had something real, but by doing that, you know, you're actually inviting trouble. So just yeah, something.
People get those obsessive things that, you know, that was the John Hinckley Jr. thing. You know, he was obsessed yeah. with Julie Foster from Taxi right. Driver and wanted to impress her. But, you know, you have to be conscientious that even if you're not an asshole like Chuck and I, even if you're a nice person, there are people that are crazy. And I think most women understand that just being nice to everybody you interact with is not always the best idea because some people are just fucking crazy. Some people don't understand just common courtesy and politeness and mistake right. it for something different.
And that was one of the things, you know, that really kind of struck me when I was doing the research for this is we do you guys who've been listening to the show for a long time know that I've done some work with people on like sex trafficking and that kind of stuff and recovering people and looking at you know that kind of thing, like who's doing it and looking out for bad guys and that kind of stuff. So a lot of the same things kind of apply on just being aware and protecting yourself in public and also, but going unnoticed, you know, when you're the girl who, you know, messes with the wrong guy at the club and draws attention to yourself, you're opening the door and, you know, it shouldn't be that way. We don't want it to be that way that, oh, you should be afraid to speak your mind and this and that, mm-hmm. but you make yourself more of a target. You're on somebody's radar as opposed to, you know, going through, you know, kind of minding your own business and hanging out with the people you're there to hang out with. And that's a real right. thing of being aware of your surroundings and not inviting more trouble. You know, think about who you speak to and how you speak to people and how it matters. But also, like Kevin was just saying, you know, being too kind can actually be, you know, a negative, you know, it can really get you into trouble because there's some crazy people out there.
It's shitty things are that way, but right. that's the way things are.
Now, another thing they talked about, and this kind of, again, is good, a good personal awareness and home security kind of idea. But they were saying, like, if you're, you know, the celebrity's house and you're the security guy, because a lot of this is meant for the security professional, the kind of training. But be polite, but be dumb when you're on the phone. And this is when anybody's kind of asking for your personal information and that kind of stuff. It really applies. But inappropriate callers should be handled in a pleasant and professional manner, but they should be given no information. Advise that you can take a message and it will be passed on to the appropriate person. Repeat that you are in a position to take the message, but beyond this, you can offer no other assistance. Just repeat the response and don't negotiate because people really try and drive. And also, they were, you know, really making a point of don't make that connection. Oh, I'll make sure she gets your message. You know, the girl that you're protecting or whatever. We see that's changing it. I know you got my message and there's some kind of connection developed in their mind. Whereas, you know, you just want to be brief with your answers and, you know, oh, they're busy and the other phone is ringing. I got to go, you know, some kind of urgency. But don't be giving out all your business to people. You know, there's no reason and no need just because you feel, you know, oh, well, I need to be kind and polite. You know, politeness gets people in trouble. And again, we're not saying don't be polite. We're saying don't feel the need to give more out of correctness.
Right, right. Yeah, I know I get irritated when I buy something from a store and they ask for my email address or phone number. You know, go fuck right off with that, man.
Yeah, exactly. They had things with, you know, visits to the residents, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses, whatever. Says, remain calm and polite, but advise visitors that they are on private property and it's not appropriate for them to visit and they must leave. If a visitor wishes to go ahead.
Now, just to be clear, it is completely legal to walk up to somebody's front door and knock on that front door and wait an appropriate amount of time before leaving. But as soon as somebody answers the door and asks you to leave, you're trespassing and you have to leave. So if you're dealing with a person in that situation and you ask them to leave and they don't, that's, you know, that should be an immediate red flag that,
right,
you know, that this is a that situation is, that can escalate.
Right. And you should, you know, advise them, hey, this is private property. It's inappropriate for you to be here and you're not welcome. If you don't leave immediately, you know, we'll call the police and you'll be arrested for trespassing. If they refuse to leave, then, yeah, you can call the police, but maybe you just take care of your own business and you put that backhoe to use, you know, whatever.
Right. Right. I mean, maybe you just beat them senseless with your cane, like Andrew Jackson,
you know, that's it. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ideas and different things, but it all comes down to being self-aware, aware of your surroundings, aware of how you talk to people. Think about how people are looking at you. And honestly, it really comes down to the trusting your gut. You get the uneasy feeling that, oh, that guy's being creepy, or, you know, hey, you know, I mean, that even happens when guys are out at a club, you know, some guy staring at you, whatever, you don't know what's going on, what he's planning on, you know, beating you up in the alley, taking your wallet, or, you know, look at, maybe he's looking for love in all the wrong places. I don't know. I don't know what's happening, but, you know, it's an ugly world out there and you need to be paying attention to how people respond and how people, you know, look at you and interact with you. Cause it really can, you know, affect things and it can take a toll. So, and it's important you look out for your loved ones, you know, more and more in America, like I know with the trafficking stuff is you don't see it on the news and you don't hear it about it much, but we're starting to see movies more and more coming out of Hollywood relating to that. But the thing is, I think it's something that happens frequently in Mexico and these other countries, but I think it happens a lot more in America than people realize. And I believe it's because the media is trying to downplay it. And my own personal opinion is that maybe they're trying to imply like, oh, the open borders don't mean anything and they're not a problem, because it kind of works against that narrative. Not that people coming over the border are all kidnappers and whatever, although I will say that happens a lot more in Mexico than it does here. But it also makes it easy to take people out of the country when you have open borders, and it makes it easy to abduct somebody and bring them into a system where they don't have access or don't speak the language and are very, you know, limited. And so that's something real that you need to, you know, to figure out, that it's important to pay attention is what you need to figure out. Just say
now.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
You'll see signs like private property, no trespassing, trespassers will be prosecuted. When you see those signs, you know that somebody's going to plan on calling the police, and you know you've got a good 10 minutes or so to act up before the cops show up. So all my private property signs have no trespassing, trespassers will be sodomized. That way they know that immediate retribution. It's not going to be calling the cops.
Now, I did read this story. I don't see it in my notes, but I did read a story last night when I was doing some research about how a guy was assassinated with a hot fire poker.
Really?
Yes.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
Yeah, no, it was his son had plotted against him, and he was a king or a prince of some, no, he was a king, and his son had taken over, and his wife ran off with another man, and they basically locked him in a castle. And about, I don't know, 6 months into being locked in the castle, somebody just came in the night and sodomized him with a hot fire poker, and they said it burned his internal organs and just shut it all down. And yeah, it was pretty disturbing. I don't know why I felt the need to leave that out, yeah. You know?
Yeah, that feels like important information. Well, I'm going to have to look into this on my own.
Yeah, I think if you just search hot poker, it wasn't good. That's all I know. Now, all that, the bottom line, assassinations are almost impossible to prevent. I mean, I'm sure people in the U.S. government and Secret Service will tell you, well, actually, we stop, you know, 200 a year or something or whatever. And that's probably right. True. But it just takes one to get through, you know, that really messed right. things up.
You have to stop every attack. They only have to be successful once.
Right. And so that's really something to be aware of. Machiavelli wrote a book called The Prince, and it's all about assassinations. And one of the lines at the end is, the best way to avoid these dangers is to avoid being hated or despised by one's subjects. And I feel like that's really the key. It's to be. But then again, I mean, everybody loved Reagan, so... You know, who knows?
Yeah, no, there wasn't anybody that disliked Reagan when he was president.
Exactly.
Right?
So it doesn't make any sense. Some things are just illogical. Now, there is one way. If you're not the most loved man in the world, you could be like the most assassination proof man who dies of natural causes, which would be the infamous Fidel Castro. Now, he had a girlfriend, Marita Lorenz. And
now she was prepped by the CIA, right? This
yes.
was a CIA.
The CIA got yeah. to her, and they gave her two botulism pills, and they said, look, you need to drop them in Castro's drink. And they said within 30 seconds he'd be dead with just one pill. So it was gonna work out. But she said as soon as she flew in and saw Havana, she just knew she couldn't do it because she's like, this guy is just too damn impressive. So she kind of got cold feet and was just uneasy and sweating. And he could just kind of tell, you know, he knew things were not the way they should be. And he leaned over, pulled out his gun, 45, because he's a man, handed it mm-hmm. to her. And she said he didn't even flinch. He said, you can't kill me. Nobody can kill me. He smiled and chewed his cigar. She said she felt totally deflated that he was so sure that she couldn't do anything. And then he just grabbed her and she said, we made love. Because, come on.
Castro was a hot-blooded, passionate man.
He's a passionate man. And I feel like, you know, socialist, communist, whatever. He, that guy definitely had some swagger. So maybe that's something you want to up your swagger if you want to avoid. Mm-hmm. Now,
though I don't recommend handing your gun to somebody that might want to kill you and then daring them to do it. I don't recommend that.
It might be that bravado that, you know, actually kept him alive all this time. You know, I don't really know. So I don't know. That's what I got for you guys today. I know I've been getting emails, some people talking about gun confiscation and things they're worried about and what the approach might be and whatever. I'm going to see if we can't look into that. Maybe put together an episode for you guys next week on talk about what might actually play out with gun confiscation and what people might do, what we think you should do, and what, you know, we'll get to the bottom of it. But with that, stay safe. And oh, sorry. If you have any ideas or thoughts on gun confiscation, shoot us an email at preppingbadass@gmail.com. And that way, you know, we can kind of incorporate your ideas and get some more stuff in there to talk about with some different perspectives. So with that, stay safe, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
The Survival and Basic Badass Podcast is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.